rising when a lady took her leave. But it was strategic. She was stuck between the bar and his hard, unwavering body.
"You'll feel even better when you crawl into bed,"
Luke said lowly, leaning in until his lips grazed her ear.
"I put fresh sheets on, the silky ones that hug your body like a second skin, hold you just so."
His arm tightened around her, not quite touching her, but definitely teasing.
"They make for one hell of a good night, sweetness."
Kennedy thought about him on her like a second skin, how it would feel to have him hold her just so, and her brain went fuzzy. But when his grin widened, as if that was exactly what he wanted, she placed a hand on each of those impressive pecs and pushed him back, but he didn't move. Realistically, there was really nowhere for him to go without bumping into another patron. That didn't mean he had to bump closer to her, making her hand slide down onto the tops of those gorgeous, flat abs of steel. "Thanks," she said, refusing to let him know he was getting to her. "That was thoughtful, but my night couldn't possibly get any better." She had a plan to get back her apples and her cottage. Confused and feeling a bit turned on, like he'd just participated in some kind of twisted public foreplay, Luke watched Kennedy strut out of the bar, his eyes locked on her sweet ass as it swished back and forth, creating a hypnotic vortex that was impossible to resist. Oh, she kept her swag light and natural, as if she knew he was watching but didn't want to appear to care. But she did, because right before she walked out the door, she turned back and caught his gaze and, holy Christ, all sorts of interesting things happened. Things that made sitting down in his jeans an impossibility. Clearly, she felt it too, because suddenly she was looking at him as if she couldn't stop thinking about those sheets. A real slip-and-slide event that would end with her moaning and begging for more. It was that promise of more, he was sure, that had her turning for the door like that ass of hers was on fire. Smart woman, since he wouldn't mind taking her up on that fantasy. Which would blow the whole "she's an obstacle and nothing more" thing he had going on. "If you're done, I fucking the shop girl, I'd like to point out that if she gets to your mom first, we're sunk," Hawk said, pulling out his cell and shoving it Luke's way. "Call her." "My mom's a bleeding heart, but she is also a savvy businesswoman," Luke said, but he reached for another drink anyway, bypassing the cider and going for the scotch. "And she isn't home tonight. She's at her book club." Hawk put the phone away.
"I hope so, because if Kennedy gets your mom to agree, she's here for good."
And if she didn't get her apples, she'd lose the shop and most likely move on to another town, which shouldn't matter to him. But it did. Every time he thought about it, this acute pressure started at the back of his shoulders and worked its way through his chest, where it settled and grew.
"She'll sell. She has to,"
Luke said, confident that she would. He just hoped that it was in time to deliver on their orders. Hawk didn't look confident or hopeful. He looked stressed out.
"When have I ever let you down?"
When Hawk didn't answer, Luke poured his buddy two fingers.
"I've got this handled." "You sure?"
Hawk gave Luke a long assessing look, which pissed him off. Luke had never not come through. At least for Hawk.
"Yeah, I'm sure. Not that I'm one to question your skills with the ladies, but she looked to be handling you. In fact, she just walked out of here with your nuts in her hand, which I have to admit freaks me out as much as it impresses me."
Luke knew exactly what Hawk felt. She impressed him too. Every time she faced an obstacle that would have most people packing it in, her stubborn chin would shoot up, her determination would increase, and it was the biggest turn-on in the world.
"One tear and Paula will have you out there picking Kennedy's apples and sinking the steel. A deal that I wanted to hold off on signing for this exact reason."
It had taken Luke the better part of the week to get Hawk to sign. Luke knew it was the right move. Knew that Rogers wouldn't wait for them to figure out how they were going to deliver. Suits like Roger's didn't give a shit about how people delivered, just that they did. And he had less than 3 weeks to make it happen.
Kennedy isn't a crier, Luke said, finding it hard to imagine a straight shooter like Kennedy using her emotions to get ahead.
And I'll figure this out.
Well, I hope so, because this is a done deal and there are no more apples in the entire fucking state.
Luke polished off his glass in a single swallow, letting the liquid burn its way down, only to catch fire in his belly.
I saw the financials she sent my mom,
Luke admitted, a wave of guilt hitting hard. He had no right to go snooping through his mom's papers. In fact, it bordered on unethical, but he'd done it anyway.
My guess is that she's a few weeks away from going bust.
She looked pretty damn happy for a woman on the verge of bankruptcy,
Hawk pointed out.
What if she doesn't sell?
She will, Luke said, pouring himself another glass because a few weeks was a generous estimation.
I just need a little more time with her.
We're running out of time,
Hawk pointed out.
If we don't harvest those trees by mid-October, we won't get them fermenting in time to make Roger's timeline. And once the rain starts, we'll lose the rest to rot.
Which is why I'm meeting Jason Stark from Bayview Orchards in the morning, before he heads to Seattle. We need those apples, sooner than later, if we are going to fulfill all of the cider orders. So I want to make an offer to buy his apples early, separate from the offer on the land.
Luke knew Hawk wasn't going to close the bar down until 1, which would put his friend in bed after 2, so he hated what he was about to ask.
Can you run the crew tomorrow morning so I can get to his office in time?
Hawk rested a hand on Luke's shoulder and gave him a nudge that always managed to lighten Luke's mood, take some of the pressure off so he could breathe easier. It was Hawk's way of saying he had Luke's back, no matter what. It was that kind of unconditional support that made Hawk such a great business partner and made Luke even more determined to make this happen for both of them. Partnering with Rogers had been Luke's idea, but Hawk had just as much to lose if it went south, maybe more. Not that he'd ever hold it against Luke if it did. Hawk wasn't the kind of guy to pass the blame. He was too loyal for that. Hell, he took care of his wife for years after she walked out on him, for another man.
You think they'll go for it? The Starks?
Hawk asked.
My option expires at the end of the season. If I end up passing, they will have to move the apples fast. Finding a buyer will be easy. Harvesting 50 acres before the rain starts will take a lot of time and energy.
Energy that Stark's kids obviously didn't have.
Plus, I will let Kennedy know that she's not the only option in town, that she doesn't have me by the nuts.
She was going to realize soon enough that there was no way she could use all the apples, and her surplus would sink her business. That selling them back to him was the smart choice. He didn't need to tell her that he still needed her apples in order to get the capital to buy Bayview.
Hawk studied Luke for a long, intense minute, then gave a worried shake of the head.
It's not your nuts I'm worried about, bro.
Advice Luke was still considering 10 minutes later when he pulled onto the same windy dirt road he'd walked 1,000 times every harvest as a kid. If he was going to come through on his word, then he needed to gain the upper hand. Cutting the engine, he stepped out of the car. The fall night was crisp and the moon was full, casting a soft light over the rolling acres of apple trees. One of Luke's favorite views, a view he'd desperately missed these past few years living in town. He stood quietly, waiting for the crickets to kick in again, and watched the rocking chair on the front porch of the cottage slowly move in the breeze. Even though his dad was gone, and the cottage had long ago been remodeled into a guest quarters, every memory, every ounce of regret he'd been avoiding for the past 10 years came rushing over him. The familiar scent of tart apples, the dew settling on the leaves, the sounds of the wood creaking under the rocking chair. That chair had been his dad's favorite, handmade by some old-timer a county over, and bought for him as a gift from Luke's mom for their 5th wedding anniversary. After a long day in the orchard, this was where his dad would come, to smoke his pipe and watch the stars. If Luke closed his eyes, he could probably still smell the cherry tobacco
and hear his dad humming his favorite Merle Haggard songs. A deep longing rolled through Luke, combined with regret and enough nostalgia to take him out at the knees. Shaking off the memory, he grabbed his keys and headed for the door, sliding the key in the lock and... What the hell? He tried again, rechecking his key to be sure, and no luck. That was when he noticed the note nailed to the door. Bring me my apples, and I'll give you a new key. Sweet dreams. K. Chapter 8. The sun hadn't even hinted at rising when Kennedy's alarm went off. Promising herself 5 more minutes, she hit the snooze button, rolled over, and froze. Her heart leapt to life and into her throat, her senses going on high alert. She strained her eyes through the dark, lying stock still beneath the soft cotton sheets. Sheets she had begrudgingly changed around 2 a.m. when she'd woken from a steamy dream starring Farmer Luke and his silky sheets. Good night guaranteed was an understatement. Every time she so much as breathed, the deliciously soft fabric felt like foreplay against her skin, leaving her more than hot and bothered, and desperate to take a ride on his big green tractor. A sad side effect, she was sure, of acute sex deprivation. After the bar, Kennedy had headed straight to Allie's shop to purchase a new lock. Allie suggested she also get a deadbolt and a gun, but Kennedy had thought a new door handle was enough. She'd planned on installing it and turning in, but then remembered the back door, to which Luke also had a key. So Kennedy wedged a chair under the handle and piled several pots and lids on top, a makeshift alarm in case of a sneaky and sexy burglar attack. By the time she'd made it to bed, it was well after midnight, but her solitude was secured. Only the big shape lying next to her, which looked suspiciously human, said her walls of solitude had been breached and she wasn't alone. Nope, the Sandman had decided to pay her a visit and stayed to test out her sheets, which apparently weren't too big or too small, but just right. He was taking up more than his fair share of the blanket, too. Burglar turned bedhog. Ignoring the urge to slip and slide right over to the other side of the bed and wish her burglar a very good morning, she pulled the covers tighter to her, squeezed her eyes shut, and tried to convince herself that she was still dreaming. Only when she reopened her eyes, the outline was even more distinct, and she smelled a lingering scent of fresh apples and sexy farmer. Kennedy was equally horrified and excited by the possibility of waking her bedmate, but she was also terrified of what the possibilities of having a bedmate meant. Like, maybe her dreams were more than a dream. So she slipped a hand beneath the sheets and did a quick pat down. Top? Check. Panties? Check. She even had on her socks. Thank God. Reaching over, she grabbed the sheets and yanked them back, only thinking after that he could very well be buck naked under there. And wouldn't that be wonderfully awkward? Giddiness mixed with the earlier panic and quickly became irritation the second the sheets hit the bottom of the bed, because her guy was clothed all right, wearing the U of W shirt she'd borrowed. No underwear. Not that it mattered, because her guy was a bundle of pillows arranged in a human-like shape. And in case that didn't get her panties at a bunch, pinned in the middle of the W of U shirt, right beneath of, was a note. In case you missed me and needed a good cuddle. L. P.S. Don't worry about getting me a key. The screwdriver worked just fine. Kennedy wanted to tell him she didn't do cuddling. It went against her independent nature. There was no point in yelling at a pillow, especially since it was clear by the drool marks and indented chest region that she had been spooning Pillow Farmer for most of the night. Kennedy flicked on the light and inspected each and every window. Completely locked. Not a single one messed with. That was when she smelled it. The earthly aroma of fresh brewed coffee drifting down the hallway and filling the room. Ignoring her robe and slippers, Kennedy shot down the hallway, flicking on every light as she went. She reached the front door to find it locked and secure, so she followed the scent to the kitchen, which was also surprisingly empty. The chair was in place, the pots and lids still perched to alert her to intruders, everything exactly the way she'd left it, except for the big, steaming mug of coffee, which sat on the kitchen table next to a single cider apple, and another note.
"Here's your first delivery. If you want more before next week, I suggest losing your big city shoes and strapping in. It's a long fall."
And that's when Kennedy saw the safety harness hanging over the chair, a big, bright pink, blatant challenge, one that she couldn't resist. She might be a people pleaser, but she wasn't a pushover. After years of merely surviving, Kennedy was ready to live a life that was full. She was upset. Luke could tell. If the sounds of gravel in his blender weren't enough to have him consider sneaking out of his bedroom window, then the pots and pans slamming around in his kitchen was. Only, he wasn't in his bedroom. He was on the couch, and Paula was cooking up a storm in his kitchen. It wasn't unusual for his mom to let herself into his house, take over the kitchen, and whip up a hearty homemade breakfast. But the clatter and banging implied she was more interested in whipping up a Category 5 sit-down than pancakes and eggs. Paula didn't do mad. It was an emotion she couldn't seem to find the energy for after Luke's dad passed away. But she did guilt like any good Catholic mother, lovingly and with heart. Luke's dad called it guilt-fueled gluttony. The more upsetting the offense, the more extravagant the meal. One time, when Luke was 12, he'd been caught kissing Bethany Smart in the confessional booth by Father Armand. By the time Luke made it home, Paula had cooked enough food to cover Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter Sunday, and it was only August.
"What you making in there?"
Luke asked from the couch.
"Right now?"
she said sweetly. Too sweetly. Country-cut bacon and potato casserole kind of sweet.
"Eggs, Benedict. It seemed fitting."
Luke rolled his eyes, but made his way to the kitchen. If he didn't get in there, she'd pull out the roasting pan and he'd never get rid of her. Passing the bathroom, he glanced at himself in the mirror and groaned. He took in yesterday's work clothes, his hair, which was standing on end, and the time of the day. It was 7:45, which meant even though he'd overslept, he'd achieved less than 3 hours of sleep. Between figuring out how to approach the Starks about their apples and staking out his sexy tenant to make sure she was asleep when he jimmied his way inside, Luke was spent. So finding Paula standing at the counter, elbow deep in dirty pots and pans, and arranging freshly ground hazelnuts on a baking sheet was the last thing he needed. Luke wasn't sure if the hazelnuts were for the eggs, the potato casserole she had going, or the French toast she was dredging.
"How long have you been here?"
he asked.
"Came over right after I saw you sneak out of the guest cottage like some kind of thief in the night,"
Paula said, dredging the fresh baked bread over and over again to punctuate her disapproval.
"It's hard to sneak when you own the property."
Luke grabbed a mug from the cupboard and lifted the coffee pot. Sadly, the only appliance in the kitchen his mother hadn't used. A strategic oversight on her part. With a sigh, he filled it with water, added the grounds, and hit start. Paula tutted, then mumbled something about his coffee for one lifestyle being a shame. Luke wanted to explain that he liked his coffee for one life. Loved it, in fact. He never suffered from a lack of female companionship, but he never took it far enough to warrant handing out his house key. Nope. From the moment he hit the sack until he had to walk out that front door, all he had to think about was himself. A state Luke rarely had the chance to indulge in. Once he stepped beyond that threshold and out into town, there were a whole lot of people he was responsible for. He provided paychecks, apples, security, and support. For his mom and aunt, he was tasked with the job of ensuring their happiness, and he was okay with that. Most days. But some days he needed space that wasn't heavy with responsibility. So he'd bought a house across town. Now he needed to invest in some new locks. Then he remembered how that had worked out for Kennedy and groaned. Maybe he needed to move to Tacoma.
This all looks wonderful, but it's Wednesday. Shouldn't you be at the shop?
I'm heading there after I finish up here, Paula said, opening the fridge and pulling out eggs, milk, mascarpone cheese, and not two, but three different kinds of apples.
Well, shit. All the ingredients for her famous hazelnut triple apple sticky buns.
This was worse than he thought.
She only made those for Easter Sunday and funerals.
His dad's funeral being the last time. Momentary sadness slid through him, but since his mom was there, he quickly brushed it off.
What are you really doing here, Mom?
I already said, making my son breakfast. He needs more than a bowl of cold cereal to get through a day of harvest. His mom had two passions in her life, her family and her food. If she could combine the two, all the better. Which was why Luke wasn't sure what had surprised him more, that she had actually sold her shop, or how much happier she'd seemed since.
Paula loved her customers. It was the main reason she'd held on for so long. But over the years, baking all day had taken a toll on her arthritis. Luke hadn't realized just how worn down she'd become. Now she had a new spring in her step, a rejuvenated passion for baking. And life. Luke hadn't seen her this worked up since before his dad passed. Not that Luke was all that excited about being the center of her newfound passion. Because for Paula, passion meant demanding penance. But the warm glow to her cheeks was a nice change. He hated to admit it, but selling the shop to someone who allowed Paula to still work the occasional shift was perfect. His mom could gab with her friends, catch up on gossip, and even bake a few pies when she felt like it. Then midday would come and she could go home and relax. Not in her sunroom like she'd dreamed, but looking at her now, even though she was clearly in a mood, she looked lighter, younger, happier. She dropped three pieces of toast onto the sizzling griddle. After flipping them over, she looked up. She had flour on her cheek and egg dripping all over his counters.
Unless you want me to leave.
Luke walked over to his mom and pulled her in for a big hug, his heart rolling over when she leaned all the way into him, patting his cheek like he was still 9 and half her size.
I don't want you to leave, Mom. I just want you to tell me why you're baking Dad's favorite sticky buns.
Paula pulled back with a look of complete innocence.
You say that like they'll bring the second coming. They were your dad's favorite, and I thought they were yours too.
They are. It's just you haven't made them since he passed,
he said carefully, studying her closely for signs of sadness. Instead of the brittle smile she usually gave when someone brought up her Oren, she gave a genuine smile that was warm and full of nostalgia.
Well, today's a special day, and I think your dad would have insisted.
She lifted the French toast off the griddle, and, after a good dusting of powdered sugar, placed them on a plate on the counter, then motioned for Luke to sit down. He inhaled the scene of cinnamon and maple syrup and lifted the first bite to his mouth. Perfection. Sweet, rich, and exactly what he needed.
Plus, I'm not baking them for you, she said. I'm baking them for Kennedy. My way of saying welcome to the neighborhood, and sorry for my son being a horse's behind.
Luke choked on his French toast.
Did you just call me an ass?
I would never say that word.
But she was smiling as if she was thinking it. Even if it did describe someone who would make that poor girl pick her own apples.
She told you about that?
Maybe Hawk was right, and Kennedy wasn't above using his mom's soft heart to get her way. Paula snorted.
That girl would never sell out a soul, even one who needs a good confession like yours. I heard it from Margaret, who heard it from her grandson, the one who married that dancer from Vegas, only to find out she was dancing for bills. He was down at the penalty box last night and overheard you talking to Hawk.
Luke didn't want to know what else the prick had overheard. He had purposefully kept his mom in the dark about the property.
She had lived through enough disappointment for him to get her hopes up, only to have them come crashing down if something went hairy. Like, say, being short a few acres of produce?
I told Margaret, that doesn't sound like my Lucas, she said in that tone that brought forth equal bouts of pride and guilt. She was concerned it would affect her standing order for pies, then reminded me how the senior center counts on those pies when welcoming new members. So I reminded her that you have always delivered my apples and would never put Margaret or any other sweet Destiny Bay resident in an awkward situation like that. Luke wanted to point out that the newest resident had many sides, but sweet wasn't one of them. Not when it came to him.
Her first delivery was handled this morning, he said,
leaving out the fact that it had been a cuddle buddy, a single apple and a little B&E.
I won't be able to complete her order until next week, though.
Paula was back to working the dough for Kennedy's sticky buns.
Well, that explains it. When she called to say she didn't need me at the shop today, I figured it was because she had scheduled someone else to work. Imagine my surprise when Fee said Kennedy went to the shop to bake the day's pies, only to return to the orchard a few hours later in my old picking harness.
Luke dug into the first course of his breakfast.
That is surprising.
Baking a day's worth of pies, then working the orchards, was tiring work. Not that it couldn't be done. Up until Orin had passed, his mom had done it every harvest. Paula was the most independent, hard-working woman Luke had ever met. Even though she'd married into the Callahan family, she had worked that orchard, right alongside Luke and his dad. When Orin became ill, she'd stepped in to take over the company until Luke came home from Seattle. To this day, she still helped out in the orchards when her arthritis would allow. So Kennedy showing up, ready to bring in that harvest, proved that she was more determined than Luke had originally thought. She wasn't stubborn. She was a fighter. If delaying her apples wasn't going to slow her down, Luke had bigger problems than he wanted to admit. Paula mixed the apples, spices, and hazelnuts into a paste, then spread it evenly across the dough, paying extra attention to the edges. So I called her and said I'd donate my sticky buns to her cause. Luke lifted a brow.
Her cause? How was picking some apples a cause?
Her big apple pie raising.
Luke choked on some powdered sugar.
A big apple what?
Pie raising.
Before Paula could explain what the hell a pie raising was, Luke's phone rang. Seeing it was Hawk's number and that he rarely used the phone, a bad feeling settled in Luke's gut.
Hey, man,
he said into the cell.
What's going on?
No apple picking, that's for sure.
Hawk's voice was tight with frustration.
I've got the trucks on the way, enough equipment for a whole crew, and only 25 guys are here.
Luke straightened.
But I hired 50 guys for today.
Noted, but it doesn't help me now.
Luke set his fork down.
We have to harvest the North Orchard and load the Golden Delicious today or we'll miss our delivery window for the market. I can't do that with half a crew.
Doing it with a full crew would be tight. During harvest, it always was. From first apple picked until that last truck pulled out, it was a nonstop grind from September through the end of November. 6 days a week, 12 hours a day. Missing even a few hours could create a snowball that would affect deliveries, timelines, and even the product.
I don't know what to tell you. I got on the phone, called everyone who was a no-show to see what was up. Most went to voicemail. A few said they'd be late, personal reasons. And Frank, oh man, Frank.
Hawk let out a sigh that was utterly defeated, and that bad feeling Luke had went nuclear.
The guy was stupid enough to admit he was helping with the town's pie raising. Whatever the hell that is.
Luke ran a hand down his face.
It's code for let's fuck with Luke's day.
Because although Luke was well-liked around town, his mom was as beloved as apple pie. So if she was backing a cause, then people were going to stand in line to help. even if it meant his life just got a whole lot more complicated.
Language,
Paula whispered, as if Jesus himself were coming to breakfast. But Luke didn't have time even to think about filtering, because Kennedy's plan was working. He had trucks scheduled to pick up last week's harvest of Honeycrisp and Granny Smith, more than an acre yet to harvest. And if he didn't make the meeting with Jason, then he wouldn't know if he even had a valid backup plan. There wasn't time for another delay. Missing that appointment with Jason meant there was a good chance he'd have to wait another few days to arrange a meeting. But getting behind on the harvest, leaving long-standing customers hanging, wasn't an option. He wanted this deal with Rogers to happen, but not at the risk of his existing customer base. Luke released a breath. I'll be there in 10 minutes. Standing, he set his plate in the sink and looked at his mother until she finally faced him.
Want to tell me about the pie raising?
Paula clapped her hands. It's genius, really. Like a barn raising, only with pies instead of boards. And in the Destiny Bay tradition of big-heartedness, the whole town's turned out in support. Chapter 9. It was official. Luke was screwed. And not in the way he'd first imagined when he'd seen Kennedy skirting around his mom's shop in that apron and challenging smile. She'd been all fire and sass, and now he was seeing how hot she could burn. The farther down the dirt road he drove, and the closer to the south orchard he got, the more his admiration and irritation for Kennedy grew. Admiration because the woman was as creative as she was sexy. It was coming on 10 in the morning, and there already had to be a few dozen people in the orchards carrying red baskets, courtesy of the home and garden store in town. Most of the volunteers had on orthopedics and dentures, and came from one of the 3 senior center buses parked along the road. But they weren't to be underestimated. Destiny Bay was home to more war heroes than the House of Representatives, and held the state record for fastest pickers in the over 60 category. Based on the crowd, which spread from the cottage all the way to the pick a basket, win a pie sign, hanging from the front porch railing, Kennedy would have a good tenth of her apples harvested by the end of the day, prepped and stored by the end of next week. That was where the irritation came in. Once they were prepped, they were out of play for cider. Not to mention, he had a pickup scheduled for a few thousand pounds of apples later that afternoon, and only half the crew he needed to harvest them. So with every basket for Kennedy picked came the very really possibility that Luke might have to admit failure. And Luke didn't do failure. He parked his truck, hopped out, and made his way through the grove, knowing he had about 10 seconds to come up with a new plan. One which included getting his guys focused and back to work on the right side of the orchard. Only as luck would have it, one glimpse at the event's host, and Luke had a hard time deciding which side was right. Kennedy wasn't only strapped into his mom's old harness. She'd figured out how to use it and was all the way up one of the trees, participating in a picking race against one of his fastest guys. People had gathered around and, based on the cheers, were not rooting for the home team. Sometime between the Apple Festival and today, Little Miss Big City had become the town's golden child, a title Luke used to hold. Oh, she wasn't any good at apple picking, and she wasn't in the lead, not by a long shot. She was too short to use the ladder, so she'd opted to climb the damn tree and was struggling to navigate the branches under the weight of the apples and canvas bag. In her defense, the bag was pretty heavy, and half her size. But it didn't matter. She was in nothing more than a harness, a flannel shirt that tied around her curvy waist, and a pair of denim shorts that were soft, snug, and a sight to behold. And apple red tennies. Half the guys stood at the bottom of the tree, looking their fill at all that the newest apple picker had to offer. The other half were waiting for her to lose her footing so they could catch her and behold every single inch of her bombshell body. Not that they would get the chance. Kennedy was wrestling the tree with enough pluck to give his Aunt Fee a run for her money in the stubbornest woman department. She reached out, picked an apple, dropped it in the bag, and moved on to the next. She was quite determined about it, too, even though she obviously had an issue with heights. He could tell by the way she avoided looking at the ground and closed her eyes every time she slipped the apple in her bag. But she didn't let it slow her progress. Nope. Kennedy used her fear to drive her. Which meant, scared or not, she wasn't going to come down until she had won, or the race was over. Taking a moment to enjoy the view himself, Luke walked over to the baked goods table, where he found Hawk, dressed in a red apron, passing out pies and manning the booth like this was the annual St. Peter's Christmas bake sale, and he was Sister Mary Catherine. Hawk handed a piece of pie to Miss Sharp in exchange for a basket of apples. The shit of it was, Miss Sharp also handed over a crisp bill and smiled. She'd been the principal at the local school since Destiny Bay was built, and never once had Luke even heard of her smiling. Hawk took the money, all grins and customer service, like he wasn't giving away their future, then helped the next customer in line. "What the hell, man?" Luke said when he got to the front of the line. Hawk picked up the next plate, which was sitting with a few dozen others, gave it a dollop of whipped cream, and took a big bite.
Thank God you're here, he said, licking his fingers. Yeah, it seems I came just in time to watch you enjoy your pie, Luke said.
And you said she had me by the nuts.
Hawk looked over Luke's shoulder and gave a respectful wave at Ms. Sharp, who was eyeing them suspiciously, then leaned in.
I came down to tell the guys to get back to work, and Ms. Sharp cornered me. Said that stealing a woman's crew was about as low as one could get. Even worse than the time I drew boobies on the cheerleading team's photo in the hallway.
Luke glanced around, feeling like he was 12 again, and hiding behind the trophy cabinet with Hawk, waiting for Ms. Sharp to go back to her office.
She knows it was us. That woman knows everything. And Walker or not, she still scares the shit out of me.
Luke couldn't fault the guy. It didn't matter that he was 6'3 and 220. Ms. Sharp had a threat factor that defied size.
Did you explain that Kennedy stole our crew?
Hawk scoffed.
Yeah, but then she just gave me that look. You know the one she gets.
Luke knew that look well. Had been on the receiving end of it a time or two growing up.
Well, she gave me that look. And said how nice it was that I showed up in support of Destiny Bay's newest resident. And before I knew it, I was wearing this apron and handing out pies.
You should be in the North Orchard, picking the Honeycrisp apples that are being shipped out in...
Luke looked at his watch.
About 4 hours.
Hawk looked at the crowd by the tree.
Our crew is there, man. All of them came down to see what was going on. We could hear the cheering over the tractors.
Luke watched as Kennedy made it up to a higher branch, her bare legs scraping against the leaves as she went, and he couldn't help admiring her effort, or the way the bottom of her shorts crept up her thighs in one of those inch-for-an-inch kind of situations that had him matching her inch-for-inch. Her face was flushed with the morning chill, her nose a little pink, and her normal sculpted bun was a scattered mess, windblown, and attracting more than a few loose twigs and leaves. She was a mess. A spectacular mess.
We're totally screwed, aren't we?
Hawk asked. And because Luke didn't believe in lying, he said,
Yup.
Then turned and reached for a piece of pie, ignoring the whipped cream because he liked his deep dish straight up. He forked off a bite and,
Hey!
A female voice yelled.
Hawk jumped as if Ms. Sharp was headed their way with their ruler.
And Luke, first bite halfway to his mouth, slowly turned to see Kennedy glaring down at him. She was straddling a branch, her hands gripping the trunk so hard he was sure she was going to go home with splinters.
That pie is for participants only, she hollered,
all that earlier nervousness replaced with indignation. Even though today was shaping up to be complete crap, Luke found himself smiling as he walked slowly over to the tree. He glanced at every guy on his crew, who wisely took a large step back. Then he looked up at Kennedy, who, in her current position, directly above him, was giving him a pretty fan-fucking-tastic view. The woman might be petite, but she was all tanned legs and sculpted thighs. If Luke stepped a little to the left, yep, just like that, he had an even better view up her shirt. Though, as always, she'd knotted it good and tight. So tight, it caused the bottom buttons to pucker, leaving a perfect-sized gap for him to gape his fill. White lace today. Nothing overtly sexual, but on her, it was the sexiest thing he'd ever seen.
"Why don't I participate by helping you down?" he offered,
and to take her mind off the fact that she was 15 feet up in a tree, Luke took a big, heaping bite of her pie, letting the fork glide out extra slow. As he'd hoped, her gaze went frosty. Then she frowned, becoming pissy and irritated, and looking sexier than any woman covered in twigs and tree sap had the right to look. "I can't afford your help. Plus, first up, last down." She let go of the trunk with one hand to point to the sign taped to the front of the booth that said, "First up, last down. Come challenge the newest apple picker in town." And then she lost her grip.
Whoa,
Luke said, his hands going out to catch her. Only she caught herself. Her eyes wide and dilated, her hands shook with what Luke knew was adrenaline overload and exhaustion, but she managed to save herself from what could have been a pretty spectacular fall, something he took to heart. He softened his voice.
"You okay?"
"Yep, strapped in." With extreme caution, she tugged her harness. "Thanks for asking." Now that he was close enough to notice the little lacerations and scratches marring her silky skin, he wished he had asked earlier, because it wasn't satisfaction he felt, seeing her city girl sass up a tree plucking apples. It was something a whole hell of a lot deeper. In the short time that he'd known Kennedy, she'd challenged him, frustrated him, annoyed him, turned him on even. Only now she had him concerned for her. Luke had enough people to worry about in his life. It was why he always kept things light with women. But this wasn't any woman. This woman drove him insane. Crazy as that sounded, he found himself growing addicted. "Plus, I only have my guys for another 2 hours."
"My guys," he clarified. "And you don't have them that long."
"Once the pie runs out, they get to leave. That was the deal."
"Hold up."
Luke put his hands on his hips, then took his time eyeballing his crew.
"Are you telling me that the crew who charges me a small fortune every day is picking your apples for free?"
A lot of grumbling sounded, followed by 20 very smart, very wise pickers, depositing their apples at the table and grabbing their tools.
"Hey, where are you going?"
When no one answered, just kept walking, she looked at Luke.
"Where are they going? They can't leave. There is still pie on the table."
"If they want their jobs come tomorrow, they can. And they will. Heading back to the North Orchard, which is where they were supposed to be before someone sweet-talked them into walking off the job," he said,
and she had the decency to look a tad bit ashamed.
"I'm sorry I upset your schedule," she said, but he had a hard time hearing the apology through her smiling. "Finding pickers is hard during harvest. Very competitive."
"So I've been told," he mused. "And even though I'd love to stand here and talk shop, I have a rig coming to pick up some apples, which are still attached to those trees over there. And since they don't pick themselves, my guys need to go back to work."
"But I still have so many apples left," she said. And something about her tone had him shifting in his boots.
"You still have a few dozen volunteers here who can pick the lower-hanging fruit free of charge." They had usable hands and canes to bat at the fruit if necessary. "That should get you through next week."
"Nothing is for free," she said. With so much acceptance, Luke's heart rolled over and showed its soft underbelly. Because with that one statement,
Understanding bloomed in his chest, and it added another emotion to the running list, soul-deep compassion. In Luke's life, there had been some struggle, and even more opportunity, and throughout it all, he'd been given so many things without expectation of a return. Amazing memories, friendship, loyalty, laughter, and love. Luke got the impression that Kennedy hadn't had much of any of that growing up, which made her determined outlook all the more impressive.
"They're getting paid in pie," she said proudly.
And damn it, she had every right to feel that. He'd delivered her an obstacle of epic proportions, yet she'd managed to figure out a solution, on her own terms, in no time flat. Kennedy wasn't looking for a handout, and she certainly wasn't looking to start a war. She just wanted a chance, and Luke couldn't fault her for that. He also couldn't stand around watching his guy screw off, not if he wanted to make today's delivery. He looked at his watch. It was 9:40. With a deep breath, he did something he'd never done before. He helped the competition.
"I'll give you my crew until top of the hour. Then my guys go back to work and you figure out the rest of the apples yourself. From the ground," he added.
Kennedy opened her mouth to argue, or maybe ask what the catch was, then closed it. She eyed her troops, retreating to join the other side and the remaining apples, and he could almost see her making mental calculations.
"Your whole crew?"
"Yup, for 20 minutes. No doubt Hawk was calling him all kinds of pussy, but Luke knew a lot about strong, stubborn women. He'd been raised by two, and Kennedy was going to get her apples, even if it meant being carted away in an ambulance for taking an impact from 20 feet up.
"Deal," she said, reaching for an apple.
"Oh no," Luke said. "You gotta come down and shake on it, sweetness."
With a satisfied smile, she slowly began to make her way down the tree, hugging it for dear life a time or two, and giving him a heart attack when she almost slipped. But sexy and capable, the woman used her small size to her benefit and scooted her way down. When those blinding tennis shoes finally touched the ground, he released a pent-up breath.
"Your whole crew for 20 minutes?
She stuck her hand out.
"And you retire the harness."
She must have liked what he'd come up with, because she accepted way too fast.
"Deal."
Those sparkling blue pools zeroed in on Luke, and she released a smile that left him feeling unsettled, in more ways than one. It was determined, calculating, and 100% trouble. She shook his hand, and while his head was telling him that he was too busy, his dick was too focused on how soft and elegant her fingers were to protest. Kennedy slipped the bag off her shoulder, the pink harness he'd taken from his mom's garage off her arms, then made a big deal about unhooking it and sliding it all the way down her body. Placing a steadying hand on his chest, she glided it off 1 foot, then the next. Finally, she leaned in to whisper, "Strap in, crew leader. It's a long fall." The sun was long gone by the time the trucks were loaded and headed toward their respective drop-off points. Luke slowly made his way toward his pickup, the night's dew dampening his boots and the hem of his jeans. He was sore, bone-tired, and ready for a hot shower and a cold beer. The crew managed to fill the orders and harvest an acre of Honeycrisps in the north orchard. It was going to cost Luke a small fortune in overtime, but they were back on schedule, and that was what was important. He'd even managed to clear out his inbox, prep for tomorrow's pick, and make a good dent in the mountain of paperwork on his desk. The late hours had nothing to do with getting ahead, and everything to do with avoiding the spitfire sleeping in his bed across the orchard. Luke's truck was still parked down by the cottage, making a stealthy exit impossible and an impromptu meet probable. Unless he was soaking in that big claw-footed tub, lying beneath a layer of bubbles and plotting his demise. Or maybe she was already asleep. The woman did rise at the baker's hour, and thanks to him, she'd had one hell of a day.
The last thing either of them needed tonight was another run-in, which was why Luke headed toward his truck with the intention of packing it in and going straight home. Only when he came out from under the last canopy of trees, every good intention he had to keep his distance vanished. He counted 15 bushels of apples at the bottom of the porch, 5 more than when he'd left that morning. More than enough to get her through the week. They were picked, packed, and ready to go, right there out in the open, for anyone with a pickup and strong arms. Kennedy might be able to muscle 1 or 2 on her own, but her little hybrid didn't offer much in terms of trunk space, or backseat space for that matter. In fact, the only way she was going to get the apples to Sweetie Pie's was a few shopping bags at a time. So unless she was planning on hiring a truck and driver, she'd be smart to conceal her produce a little better. But what had him stepping past his truck and toward the walkway was Destiny Bay's newest resident apple picker, who sat on the top step of the porch. She was in leggings and an oversized sweatshirt, surrounded by enough Band-Aid wrappers and half-eaten pies to supply a preschool class, and had a full carton of milk at her feet. Her hair was damp, her face devoid of any makeup, and she looked wiped out. "The last person I want to talk to tonight is you," she said, and the gravity in her voice had him halting, feeling the insane urge to apologize to her, like he had fucked with her day and her mental state. Luke opened his mouth and went a step from the shadows, but she wasn't anywhere close to done. "We had an agreement," she said, her tone frosty enough to cryogenically freeze his nuts. "Half when it was signed over, then monthly payments until we are square." Kennedy turned her head, and that was when he saw the phone and realized she hadn't seen him. Oblivious to his presence, she continued the heated conversation and, based on the tense way she held herself, lips pursed with an expression of sheer exasperation, it was most likely his aunt, which meant Luke's nuts were safe, for the moment. "That's not what you promised," she said quietly, her voice so close to cracking, he felt it in his chest. Then she closed her eyes out of raw disappointment, and he knew that couldn't be his aunt. Fee was frustrating as hell, stubborn to a fault, but she'd never purposefully hurt someone's feelings. And Kennedy's feelings were beyond hurt. The little sighs she kept releasing told him as much. They also told him that she was too disappointed for it to be anyone other than family or an ex. "I'm happy for you that Argentina went better than expected, and that they want you to move there, but you still have responsibilities here," she said, then paused as if listening to the person on the other end. "No, this isn't me being spiteful. Spiteful would have been demanding that we sell the property since you couldn't buy me out completely." Kennedy's mouth opened, then closed, and she hung her head, the phone dangling from her fingers. Luke could hear a man huffing and puffing, so indignant he could make out a few words from across the walkway. Jesus, the guy bitched more than a hawk when he lost a bet. "Again, not my problem, because a month ago you wanted the condo, so much that you agreed to buy me out, and I agreed to your ridiculous offer, even though we both knew the condo was worth more than that appraisal you got. So either send me a payment before the end of the week, or I will have my own agent appraise the house and we can add the difference to your balance." Luke could feel the cutting silence from where he was standing, could feel her anger and frustration. Even worse, he could feel her pain. He wanted to tell the idiot to take the deal, but he didn't want Kennedy to know he was there, listening in on what she had assumed was a private conversation. "Fine. Next Friday, but I'm serious, Philip. If it isn't in my account by the end of the day, I will send my grandma over to collect." She rolled those pretty eyes of hers, but he could tell she was closer to tears than she'd ever admit. "Yeah, well, you also promised not to have sex with other women, so I'm not holding my breath." Luke winced at the information, but his heart? That did a hell of a lot more. Pinched and ached over the heartache she'd gone through. It wasn't just the disappointment in her tone that called to him. It was the gentle acceptance of the situation,
as if she was angry at herself for hoping for more. Kennedy hung up, and he heard the telltale sound of a sniffle, followed by a sharp, shaky breath that had his gut twisting.
Time to peace out.
The woman was a few seconds from tears, and the only thing worse for her than crying over some guy would be the knowledge that Luke saw her crying over some guy. He remembered their first conversation, and what she'd said when he offered to buy her out. "Do you think it's as easy as throwing some money my way, and I'll just happily up and relocate my whole life?" The dickwad on the phone had to be the reason she'd moved to Destiny Bay. Reminding himself of the whole people in glass houses nonsense, he wondered if some other guy down the road would refer to him as the dickwad who had her leaving Destiny Bay. Because now that Luke knew the why, he could easily figure out the what and the how to get her apples. And that made him more than a dickwad. It made him the kind of person he couldn't look at in the mirror without wanting to punch something. Figuring that was his cue to head back to the barn and get some more paperwork done, Luke turned around. "If you came to steal the apples," she said, her voice disappearing into the breeze, "the bushels are zip-tied together, then attached to buckets hiding on the roof filled with orange icing dye. One tug, and you'll look like a giant mango."
"Thanks for the heads up. Mango clashes with my rugged good looks."
Luke walked closer until he could see her face under the moonlight, and his stomach tightened. She looked small and splintered and torn up, and he wasn't talking about all the band-aids on her body.
"I didn't come here to take your apples, sweetness. Just picking up my truck so I can go home."
She looked at him long and hard, as if trying to figure out why her bullshit meter was still going off.
"You okay?"
he asked. She wiped at her cheeks and offered up a too bright smile. "You know me." He did know her, knew that smile was for his benefit, not hers. Just like he knew where her vulnerable buttons were, and up until a second ago had no issues with pushing them, which was so far from the kind of man he wanted to be, the kind of man Kennedy deserved.
"Night, sweetness."
With a parting wave, he headed toward the truck. He reached for the door handle, and she called out to him. "Luke." He turned around. "You don't have to run off just yet. You got to see the fireworks. Might as well stay for the pie. I believe that one on the far left is yours." Right, his prize for picking the most apples in 20 minutes. Little did she know he could have picked 3 times the number, but he told his guys to let him set the pace. He was willing to help out in order to get his team back and focused on the right job, but he wasn't going to help himself right out of business, even if it meant sending a woman who had no business picking apples up a tree for the day. A mix of shame and anger washed over him. Shame that he'd been a part of the recent struggle. Anger that come next week, he knew her struggles were going to become worse, and he wasn't in a position to help. In order to hold strong to his position, he'd have to hinder hers, which would eventually lead to hurting her, and that made him sick.
"No worries," he said. "I can pick up my pie tomorrow."
Luke turned to leave. "No, wait." Chapter 10. "These won't last until tomorrow," Kennedy said, standing up to hold out his pie. She told herself there was no logical reason to encourage Luke to stay. Not tonight, anyway. Not when she was feeling raw and exposed, and so damn alone she couldn't stomach the thought of being stuck with just her thoughts for the rest of the night. She needed a distraction, even if only temporarily. Plus, fair was fair, and he'd won the humdinger. She still couldn't believe it. Not that he'd won, since the man had outpicked his crew 3-1, but that he'd helped. Instead of yelling at her, which he had every right to do since she'd stolen his crew, he'd pulled everyone together to get the job done, clapped his hands, gave some curt orders, got people working. Sure, it was only 20 minutes, but his crew accomplished more in that short amount of time than Kennedy and her seniors had over the rest of the afternoon.
She didn't have a game plan ready for when these ran out, but for today, she had enough apples. And hope. It wasn't Luke's fault that Philip had decided to crap all over her plans. So she'd offered Luke his pie. No big deal. Except now that he was coming up the walkway, his boots crunching the gravel beneath, she couldn't help wondering how safe it would feel to be wrapped up in all 6 feet plus of pure, unadulterated male.
You sure?
He asked, his hands shoved in his front pockets and his attitude dialed to, I've got you. It had been so long since anyone had Kennedy covered. She wanted to pretend, just for a moment or two. How dangerous could a moment or two be? She walked down the first step, gasping a little as the cut on her right leg brushed the porch railing. He appeared bigger and stronger with each step he took until he finally reached out for the pie, their fingers grazing, and she gasped for a whole different reason, one that made it clear that a lot could happen in a single moment. Really bad decisions could happen in two. She didn't know whether to be thrilled or terrified when, instead of taking his pie and heading home, Luke sat on the porch, then pulled not one, but two forks out of the silverware holder and patted the step next to him. Really bad decisions, Kennedy thought, deciding to remain standing.
Don't read too much into this. The pie is 5.